तपाईं SBS नेपालीको साथमा हुनुहुन्छ।
SBS नेपाली SBS साउथ एशियनमा।
नमस्ते। SBS नेपाली पडकास्टमा अब पालो भएको छ यो हप्ताको नेपालको कुराकानीको र श्रोताहरू, आज हामी इतिहास सम्बन्धी विषयलाई जोड्दैछौ। ब्रिटेनको युनिभर्सिटी अफ लन्डन अन्तर्गतको स्कूल अफ ओरिएन्टल एण्ड अफ्रिकन स्टडीजबाट नेपालको राजनीतिक इतिहासमा विद्यावारिधि गरेका ब्रिटिश इतिहासकार जोन वेल्पटन सन् 1970 दशकमा पहिलो पटक नेपाल पुगेका थिए। त्यस यता भने उनले नेपालको इतिहास अनुसन्धान गर्ने लगायतका शैक्षिक गतिविधिमा सक्रिय रहँदै आएका छन्। जङ्गबहादुर इन युरोप र अ हिस्ट्री अफ नेपाल जस्ता किताबका लेखक पनि रहेका वेल्पटनलाई हालसालै नेपाल सरकारले नेपाली इतिहासको क्षेत्रमा उल्लेखनीय योगदान पुर्याएको भन्दै इतिहास शिरोमणि बाबुराम आचार्य पुरस्कारद्वारा सम्मानित गरेको छ। जङ्गबहादुरको बेलायत यात्राको बेलादेखि आधुनिक नेपालको समयसम्ममा जातपातलाई लिएर नेपाली समाजमा भएका रूपान्तरणका कुरा र गणतन्त्र घोषणापछि पार्टीहरूले लिएको नीतिहरूलाई केन्द्रबिन्दुमा राखेर नेपाल संवाददाता गिरीश सुवेदीले जोन वेल्पटनसँग गर्नुभएको कुराकानी सुन्नतर्फ लागौं अबको प्रस्तुतिमा। र यो सँगै हामी तपाईँलाई जानकारी गराउन चाहन्छौ कि यस कुराकानीमा व्यक्त गरिएका विचारहरू वक्ता स्वयंका हुन् र यी विचारहरूप्रति एसबीएसको समर्थन वा विरोध छैन।
You first arrived in Nepal in the early 1970s as a VSO English language volunteer. What drew you from teaching into becoming a leading historian of Nepal? And how did that early experience shape your later scholarly journey?
I was a VSO English teacher for 2 years. And during that time, although I read a bit about Nepal, a general background, I wasn't actually doing any history research. But what happened afterwards, when I got back, I started being invited to brief other people who were being sent to Nepal, and I sort of drifted into concentrating on the history. So that strengthened the interest. And then when Abi Zubaydi came to Britain to study, he had just been writing a history of Nepali literature in English, and he'd read Jungbahadur ko Balayat Yatra. So he suggested doing an English translation of that. And now at the same time as this was happening, I was not very happy in my civil service job. So eventually I decided that I would, do full-time research, switch to doing a PhD, which is while I was still working on the Jungbahadur translation and commentary.
Jungbahadur in Europe is regarded as the first Nepalese diplomatic mission to the West. From your archival and narrative work, what aspects of Jungbahadur's European history do you find most revealing about Nepal's engagement with international politics in the 19th century?
Right, well, the Jungbahadur ko Balayat Yatra, which is probably written by a member of his party, we're not 100% sure which one, that is interesting because it has a strange combination of some quite good insights with sometimes total misunderstanding. Remember that they were encountering a Western country for the first time. You get things like the tyranny of the clock. The Western obsession with exact timings really came in with railways when you had to get the times right. In pre-industrial times, you didn't bother about counting minutes and seconds. So they're right on that. But then you get things like the account of Parliament. They were right about the monarch not having that much influence, the real power not being there. And the other thing that is very different from the way Nepal interacts internationally now is that you had to square your own caste system with what you expected to do in the West. Jung had a problem. He may not himself personally have been very worried about associating with non-Hindu people who are technically impure. But he had to worry about stories getting back to Nepal and that undermining his legitimacy at home. So you get all these marvelous stories about his having the carpet deliberately cut when he was entertained by the East India Company. He couldn't sit down at the table the way a Nepali diplomat would today. They were in an anteroom. They were eating fruit, I think, and water they'd poured themselves. The others were eating a sort of ordinary, standard British banquet. And he insisted on the carpet being cut so that you couldn't say they were in the same place. The Balayat Yatra tends to some extent to have a rather rosy picture of Britain, saying everything was fine, everybody was happy. And this is despite the gross poverty, which we know afflicted many people in 1850. Partly they're just mesmerized by the newness of it all. Partly, perhaps, if you wanted to justify Jung Bahadur's policy of close collaboration with the British, then it was in your interest to sort of talk up the splendor of European civilization. So that sort of combination of different things, having to ride two horses at the same time, be a pure Hindu, but, you know, make diplomatic overtures and alliances at the same time.
Having witnessed Nepal's transformations over several decades, from the end of Rana autocracy through democratic shifts, monarchy's end, and civil war, to the 2015 earthquakes and beyond, how do you see Nepal's evolving identity and historiographical discourse today? What emerging themes or gaps do you believe deserve more scholarly attention?
Right. Well, one thing that stands out is that there is quite a bit of continuity. A lot of the problems remain similar, particularly not enough sort of local employment. The problem of lack of land started developing probably early in the 20th century. That hasn't really been solved. There has been a big change, of course, in the way in which you look at Nepal as how far you recognize the claims of sub-Nepali identities, you know, the different Janjatis and so on. And that obviously has been a very important change, recognized in the new constitution after Janandalan II. It was a point that the Maoists exploited very skillfully during the insurgency. And in terms of civil society activity, after the Panchayat really kept the lid on things, there was a lot of pressure. Associations for the different ethnic groups and so on became very active, starting in the 80s as the Panchayat liberalized and accelerating during the 90s. So that's a very important thing. I still feel that, at least in the hills, it may be less important than people think. There was a failure, as you know, to accept the proposal for identity-based provinces, which would have meant that in all the major ethnic groups would have a province in which they were a plurality, not a majority. You couldn't draw the borders like that. That was rejected. It's only Madhes province where it's Patanta Adarit. And my hunch is that although quite rightly there will be more research on the Janjatis, there's a big project that Krishna Hachetu is coordinating, which will be producing an encyclopedia of indigenous nationalities. So work on aspects of Nepali history which are not state-centric. So that's important. And then that ties into the whole business of caste relationships. I follow Mitra Pariyar in saying that Jat is really the better term, and that is both ethnic group and caste. And there you've got a strange situation that those divisions seem quite important still out in the countryside where most people live, but they are collapsing effectively in the urban area. I remember from the Rana period under Judah Shomcha, that's right, a Newar tutor eloped with the Rana princess he'd been coaching, teaching her English or something. And Judah was absolutely horrified by this, and he kept badgering the Brit, saying, look, this is undermining my status in my family. Arrest those people and send them back. And the Brit said, what are you going to do with them? Well, we're going to put the lady in something like the equivalent of a monastery. She'll just be kept quietly aside, and we'll put the man in prison. And of course, there's no way the Brits could agree to do that. But fast forward to today, then marriages between Newars and non-marriages. Well, the present prime minister has a Newar wife, Bawaram Bhattarai Hasila Yami. And my oldest Nepali friend, he's now left Hong Kong, but my friend in Hong Kong, Naresh Kerala, was also married to a Newar. So the barriers between the so-called upper castes are collapsing. You've still got a problem, even to a certain extent in the town, with the Dalit issue, but that's weakening as well. So it's a question of how those trends work out. Will the sort of urban approach succeed in transferring to the countryside, in which case the whole caste issue becomes less important? And then that ties in with the whole business of reservations, which I've written on most recently. You have a problem if you're using caste as an indicator of disadvantage or exclusion is the in term at the moment. It's only an approximate indicator because you obviously have poor Bowen and you have rich Muggers and certainly rich Takalis and Nawaz. So my line has been in the past, and I think I still cleave to it, that you don't want to play up too much. You don't want to give too much in the way of entitlements tied to a particular caste or ethnic group. That's where I disagree with a number of other scholars, both Nepali and foreign. And the final thing which is emerging, apart from urbanization itself, I mean, the growth of the Kathmandu Valley, is what we sometimes call partification, that since the new settlement, the new constitution, or even before, you got a system where the parties, the major parties, it started as part of the peace process, you divvy up the patronage. So Congress get to nominate some people and UML and the Maoists another. So it becomes a matter of connections between the party leadership and their cadres and businessmen they're associated with. That's a problem in India as well, but it's perhaps more extreme in Nepal. And the question is, how do we try to break that down? How do we make the parties more democratic internally? If I knew the solution, I would tell you. But I think no one has worked out exactly how we can tackle that one. We're still thinking.
र श्रोतावृन्द, यो हप्ताको नेपालबाट यो कुराकानी सुनिहाल्नुभयो. हाल हङकङमा बस्दै आएका इतिहासकार जोन वेल्पटनसँग नेपाल संवाददाता गिरीश सुवेदीले कुराकानी गर्दै हुनुहुन्थ्यो. र श्रोताहरू, यो सँगै हाम्रा थप पडकास्टहरू चाहिँ तपाईँले हाम्रो वेबसाइटमा पनि पाउन सक्नुहुन्छ. ठेगाना sbs.com.au/nepali हो. र यो सँगै तपाईँहरूलाई जानकारी गराउन चाहन्छौ कि यस कुराकानीमा व्यक्त गरिएका विचारहरू वक्ता स्वयंका हुन् र यी विचारहरूप्रति SBS को समर्थन वा विरोध छैन. हाम्रा थप प्रस्तुतिहरू SBS अडियो एप मार्फत पनि सुन्न सक्नुहुन्छ. त्यसका लागि तपाईँको एप स्टोर वा गुगल प्लेबाट यो एप निशुल्क डाउनलोड गर्नुहोस्. युट्युबमा भने हामी @SBS साउथ एसियनको नाममा उपलब्ध छौं. सब्सक्राइब गरेर साथ दिनुहोला. साथै हामी फेसबुक, एक्स र इन्स्टाग्राममा पनि उपस्थित छौं. SBS नेपाली भनेर खोज्नुहोस्. र हाम्रा थप सामग्रीहरूका लागि हाम्रो वेबसाइटको ठेगाना हो sbs.com.au/nepali.
अनलाइन र सोशलमा थप सामग्रीहरू पाउनुहोस्. sbs.com.au/nepalima जानुहोस् वा फेसबुकमा SBS नेपालीलाई फलो गर्नुहोस्.
लाइक, शेयर र कमेन्ट गर्नुहोस्. SBS नेपालीलाई फेसबुकमा साथ दिनुहोस्.